Well, good morning. We're a small group of treasurers, I guess. That's okay. I wasn't really expecting a whole lot of people who don't do this type of work to be in here very much. So this is the first time that I've done a presentation like this, so bear with me and don't judge me too harshly. I don't know if I have enough material or too much, but we'll figure that out as we go. I've been on the school board twice in two different settings. The last time I was the treasurer, and it was probably because that's the line of work that I do in my life. If you are a treasurer or will become a treasurer, it's probably because of one of two things. People perceive you as being a successful businessman, not like me, or people think that you may be mathematically inclined, and that might be why the CSRC chose me. Now, bookkeepers tend to be boring, so hopefully I don't put you to sleep. I hope you've all had your cups of coffee, and this all said, let's get into it. So, serving as school board treasurer, our agenda is we're going to start with being a man of character, as this should be the foundation of our being the treasurer. Then we're going to look a little bit into the transition between treasurers, and that's both ways, when you come on or when you're departing. And keeping the books, where we get a little more into the weeds. And the last two topics are going to be discussions, working as a team, and that's the school board team. And if we have time, other responsibilities. And primarily, I was thinking that quite often, the treasurer is also the school board secretary. And we'll have a discussion about that too. Okay, let's start off with a little bit of a poll. How many of you are the school board treasurer currently? Okay. About half of you. How many have served as the school board treasurer? Okay, we got two others currently. So that must mean that the rest of yous want to become the school board treasurer in the future. No? Okay, well. Okay, so let's look into being a man of character. There's two, two parts to this that I want to especially look at. That is being trustworthy and being accountable. So, if you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to Luke 16. When we are the treasurer of the school board, we are a steward of the church. What we are working with is money that is not our own. It's the church's and ultimately God's money. And a steward is a person who manages another's financial affairs or his property. So therefore, it's very important that we are trustworthy, because God forbid that anybody would think that we would be stealing what is not our own. So Luke 16, we'll start at verse 10. I should have brought my glasses, but I'm still kind of in that transition stage, so I haven't always brought them along when I should. So, Luke 16, verse 10. He that is faithful in that which is the least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, or our money that we use to do our day-to-day affairs, who will commit to your trust true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another's man's, who shall give you that which is your own? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So, faithfulness in this chapter is a person that shows themselves faithful in business. He is also worthy of trust. Another aspect of it is faithfulness also has the thought of being kind, the kind of person that can be relied on or dependable. In the one verse in 1 Corinthians 4 speaks to this. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Let's turn to Luke 19 now. We'll just look at accountability for a bit. Oops. I should have stayed where I was. Luke 19, and we'll read 12 to 17. He said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. He called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to give He commanded these servants to be called unto him to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hast gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well done, good and faithful servant, because thou hast been faithful in very little. Have thou authority over 10 cities? And the next one gained 2 pounds with his 2 pounds, and he gained, or 5 pounds. So he gained, the master, sorry, I'm behind in my notes. The master gave him the authority over his 5 cities. And ultimately, at the end, there was one servant who didn't do anything with what he had, and he lost everything. So what I first see in this passage is that we weren't all created the same, but we have all been given something to do. The first one was capable of handling more than the second one and the third one. God holds us accountable for what we've been given. The man who wasted his opportunity lost everything. So while accountability to God is inevitable, we can't make a choice in that. We can choose to be accountable to our fellow men we can let them speak into our lives and help us be stronger men for the Lord. Here's a couple verses that speaks to that, being accountable to other people. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. Proverbs 12:15. Ecclesiastes 4:9 and 10 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And one last one. Iron sharpeneth iron, and one man sharpens another. Proverbs 27:17. So, one other thing that we can do is we can do our work with a good attitude. The song this morning said that we have, great is thy faithfulness, all that I have, all that I have, thine hand has provided, something like that. So we don't have anything that's our own. We give back to God what service for what he has done for us. This verse that's up here is one of my favorite verses in the Bible. Reminds me of the quip that we sometimes tell our children. When our children say, do we have to? What do we reply?
You don't have to if you want to.
You don't have to if you want to. Well, then I want to. Good, then go do it. When ye have done all those things which are commanded you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. Luke 17:10. It is only our duty to give back to God because he's given us so much. And we heard of the last topic there in the auditorium. It is a great privilege that we have to educate our children with a Christian education. Okay. Now we're going to move to transition between treasures. The time's going to come when you'll either be taking over for the last treasurer or you're going to be handing the reins over to the new treasurer. So here are some points to make a smooth transition. And I'm going to give you a list of mine, and then we're going to have a little bit of a discussion so we can help each other. And on your handouts, there's places to write notes if you find anything that anybody else says helpful. Be sure to write it down. So, being the treasurer tends to be a longer-term position. At least in our setting, it is. The chairman might be chairman for a year, and it might rotate, but the treasurer tends to be for the whole term of his service as treasurer. And I think the biggest reason for this is probably due to assigning authority on the bank account of the school bank account. In the school board where I was treasurer, I spent my whole term as the treasurer. So, just a couple thoughts when you are having your school meeting, the annual meeting where you become the treasurer. The deacon of the church will be likely your right-hand man in this process because he likely has signing authority on the school books as well, or the school account as well. Have your motion ready. Signing the authority of the account over to the new treasurer, because you're going to need it to get that done at the bank. They're going to require sign minutes of the meeting to transfer the signing authority to a new person. Next, this is for the treasurer that's outgoing. He start handing over all of the records for the school, any relevant files, documents, etc. This is for the treasurer that's coming in. Make sure you ask the old treasurer lots of questions. He has a lot of knowledge and probably most of the answers that you need to know too. This may actually happen for quite a long time, a couple years. He might still be asking you questions, but that's okay. Help out the new treasurer. Now be helpful for the first couple of months. For example, the new treasurer might not be as well versed in some of the deadlines that he needs to know. And the one example I can think of is remitting payroll source deductions. But I also encourage you to be smart, because eventually the new treasurer might think that you're thinking he's incompetent, which we don't want to let him get that. So do it for a couple months. Remind him when things might be due. Maybe the credit card statement, if you have one. And lastly, let go. Your time on the school board is over. And if you've done something for 6 years, sometimes it might be a little tough to let go of it. But that's okay. There will be other doors that God will open for you to enter. What am I missing? What are some other suggestions? Thinking of transferring the responsibility from one treasurer to the other. And whatever you do, don't all talk at once.
One thing that I became treasurer 3 years ago, and you have to hand over all the records for the school. If the outgoing treasurer has something written down, not just verbal, do this, do that, it helped me a lot.
Right. Have your procedures written down. It's a good idea. I have to admit, I didn't write anything down when I transferred the... Anything else? If not, we better carry on. So keeping the books, this is where it could get in the weeds a bit. I hope you had your coffee. The first thing you need to know is what accounting convention that your school books are done in. We're going to look at both, and by the end of the presentation, you probably know what I prefer or recommend. So the first is cash basis accounting. So cash basis accounting, you generally have an open balance and an ending balance, and the cash in hand tends to be what you think that the school has made or is worth. That's not necessarily true. So, some points on cash basis accounting. You record the revenue when the cash is received and the expenses when the cash is paid. So here's the income and the expenses. It focuses on actual cash flow into and out of the business. as the bank account. It may not complete, it may not provide a complete picture of the business's financial health, as it doesn't account for outstanding receivables or payables. And we'll see that in the financial reports that are in your handout. It is great for committee work. We often see this type of financial report in charity newsletters that you see in your church mailboxes. Just a simple report that tells the equity and the income and expenses all in one. At the bottom here, you notice that there is a couple of financial notes at the bottom that may be relevant. In Canada, only a few select industries, like if you were using this for business, are even allowed to use it, because it doesn't really tell the story, and you can easier manipulate the books with this method of accounting. It is interesting. The most common of those industries you might recognize, it's farming. Okay, we'll move on. This is a sample ledger. Is that clear? Let's see if we can get it just a tad clear. So it's a flat ledger, one entry, one part for each entry. If you notice, each of the invoices are recorded when they are paid, instead of when you get the invoice. And we'll discuss the one that I've got stroked out a little later. Okay, the other method of accounting is accrual-based accounting. In accrual-based accounting, we have two sets of accounts, or two sets of groups of accounts. The first group, which is these three, the assets, liabilities, and equity accounts are all part of the balance sheet accounts. And the bottom two are part of the income statement accounts. I should actually ask, before we go too deep in the weeds, is everybody familiar with accrual-based accounting? Some, others not. Okay, so this report is based on the chart of accounts. Each account is considered a bucket where you can place money in. And in accrual-based accounting, it'll be double-entry accounting, so every transaction will have two parts to it. You'll have the credit and the debit parts to it. So when you make a transaction, if you take your handouts, and I think it's the second last page, these financial reports are made off of these transactions. Oh, what did I do? I was pushing buttons. There. I'll put that down for now. So each transaction has a number beside it in the first column. And you can see the different accounts in the account column. Which accounts are used, and the debits and the credits. Each transaction has to be balanced. Therefore, you, in as in the first transaction, you have $6,000 debit and a $6,000 credit. And that will become important because that keeps your books balanced. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. I've got this slide in the handout, so I'm not sure we're going to talk about each one of these things, but if you look, keep pushing the wrong buttons. So here's the trial balance. If you look here, this list and the credit list are balanced. They equal the same thing. So here's a couple of the formulas that are important. A balance sheet gets its name because the assets equals the liabilities plus equity. So that makes it balanced. That's the balance sheet. No. A balance sheet summarizes the company's assets, liabilities, and the shareholders' equity at a specific point in time. So in this case, it's at September 30th, 2025. The assets are our checking account, which is that amount, our accounts receivable, which is this amount, and our liabilities, our accounts payable, our payroll liabilities, and a loan to Brother Leslie. And the two equity accounts we have here, the retained earnings is just the amount that came across from the previous year, and that is $1,000. If you remember back at that first financial report, the opening balance was $1,000. So that's basically that money right there. And the current year's earnings is that. And we notice that I've got a mistake in this report. That's not good. My books aren't balanced. This number should equal this. I made some late changes, and I made sure that this one was right. Oh, let's. I don't think so. So an income statement is just, it shows you what you made in a period of time. It shows what your organization earns, what it spends, and whether it makes a profit over this period of time, and this is September. So here, comparing the two reports with the cash basis report. So let's just look at these account or these transactions. If you look at the first transaction, somewhere I have So if you're all on the page called General Ledger Journal Entries, the first transaction, first we're going to talk about our school. Our school's called ABC Academy. It has 3 teachers and 40 students. We have 1 non-church member family with 2 children attending school. So the first transaction records the invoice to John Gilmer, who is the non-church member family, for tuition. We put $6,000 into accounts receivable and record tuition which is in a revenue account as $6,000. Our second transaction, since we pay our teachers at the beginning of the month, if you noticed, our account had only $1,000 in it, and payroll's gonna take more money than $1,000. So we got a loan from Brother Leslie. He agreed to loan us $10,000, interest-free. So that puts $10,000 into the bank account and puts $10,000 into liabilities. In accounts three, or transactions three through five, they're a bit convoluted, but there's not really a good way to simplify payroll. But if we look at the first one, number three, the first line is the wages. He makes $3,000. The second line is the net pay. What he gets of that $3,000 is $2,322.30, and that's because of the payroll deductions that come off his paycheck. And that's the next three lines. You have income tax of $450, CPP of $178.50, and EI of $49.20. The next line is the employee portion of the source deductions. The employee and the employer both have to pay into CPP and EI. And that's $247.38 for the employer's portion, which is $178.50 for the CPP, the exact same as what the employee had to pay. But the employer's portion of EI is more. Anyways, four and five are the same. So, number six's transaction was the church donation. Brother Jonathan put the church donation into the account on the Monday after he got it, and that put $8,000 into our account. Number seven, John Gilmer, our non-church member family who saw the value of a Christian education, he pays half of his tuition. So that put $3,000 into the account and deducted $3,000 from accounts receivable. He's going to pay the other half in January when he has more money. So transactions 8 through 12 are simply a bunch of invoices that came in that haven't been paid yet. The time's getting away on me here. So they go into accounts payable and get paid on in transactions 13 to 17, with each of the checks listed there, 13 to 17. Transaction 18 that happened on September 25th, I didn't get paid. If you remember on that written ledger, that's the one I stroked out because it's not recorded on this financial statement because it hasn't been paid yet. Another thing that hasn't been recorded on this financial statement is the CPP source deductions, because it also wasn't paid. Remember, the cash basis financial report only has what happened when cash was transferred. Then the last couple transactions were the bank credit interest and the bank service charges. So let's look back at this account. So if you look at the bottom line here, where most people look, you would think that the school's doing pretty good. But in a nutshell, the school's only doing that good right there. Until when you take into consideration the liabilities that haven't been paid yet. One of the biggest things that skews a cash basis financial report is the fact that you consider a loan income. That don't make sense, really. Anyways, we better keep on going. So a few best practices of accounting. So enter invoices when you receive them and pay them on time. This can be a bit of a problem because we're all busy and we're usually doing the school books on the side when we find the time. But it's no excuse because we still have to pay them and it's our responsibility to pay them on time. Any interest charges takes away from the money that we have to use for other things that are more important. Pay the teachers on time. Nobody likes a late paycheck. The money that is on their paycheck, they earned. And they may have obligations with that money like the next day after they're supposed to receive it, like car payments, or maybe if you have a married man as your school teacher, he might have a house payment that needs to be paid the next day. So pay them on time. Make sure you remit your source deductions to the government on time. Just because you deducted it from the employee's paycheck doesn't make that money yours. That's the state's money. Just for interest's sakes, the CRA will charge you a penalty if you pay late. And here's the amounts. 3% if the amount is 1 to 3 days late. 5% 5% if it's 4 or 5 days late, 7% if it's 6 to 7 days late, 10% if it's more than 7 days late, or if no amount is remitted, and 20% if this is the second or subsequent time you are assessed this penalty in a calendar year. And to add insult to injury, they also charge you interest on the late source deductions and the penalties assessed. So pay them on time. So have accurate financial reports for the school board meetings because financial decisions have to be made. You might have to, unless your school wasn't like ours, there's not an unlimited amount of money there. Like, you might have to put teachers' requests on hold because of financial constraints. And hand out financial reports in church boxes, mailboxes monthly. And that's for the brethren to know where the school is at so they can, I guess, donate more if necessary. These last couple of points, some have to do with the annual business meeting. Have the books in order for the auditors for the annual business meeting. They'll come in and audit. The one thing that I was going to say when we were talking about accountability. Sometimes the auditors might not have as much financial knowledge as you do. And the one right told me one time that, where's the pen? I want to sign. And it's like, you're supposed to be making sure that I'm not making mistakes or worse yet, stealing money. Well, it's between you and God if you're stealing. It's like, ooh. I want a little more accountability than that. And review the books so you know what you're talking about when you give the financial reports at the annual business meeting. Do you have any ideas, other ideas about what people should be doing when they are keeping the books? So what are some ideas about working as a school board team? We're the treasurer, but there's more to school board work than just keeping the books for the treasurer. For example, one of the things when you have school programs at our school board kind of ended up with a system. The chairman was always the moderator of the meeting. The vice chairman and the trustees, they generally did the ushering work at school programs. And so far, it's been left up to the treasurer to lead the singing at the school programs. Was there any other thoughts? I'm sorry, I kind of got a little flustered during the financial report stuff. If you have any questions, you can drop me an email or whatever. It's on the back of the program. Thank you for coming to this workshop.